Well, good morning, and I trust that you have enjoyed and appreciated and taken something already from the worship assembly this morning, and to just be together as God's people here in one place, and to bow our heads and remember why we are here, because of Jesus, to sing these songs and to bow and pray these prayers, and to hear our brother proclaim the gospel this morning from both Ephesians and the 8th chapter of Acts. I want you to turn your Bibles to the verse that will change your life. And I tell you what, you can go anywhere with that. And so I've just picked one out of hundreds, and it's in the book of Philippians and chapter 4 and verse 8. Philippians, the 4th chapter, and verse 8. Because I believe that if we would apply this verse, not just read it, but live it, that it would change everything about us. Finally, brethren, it is a word of conclusion. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence, if anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. Some translations render that, ponder these things, or let your mind dwell on these things. Let me ask you a question this morning, and it's an odd kind of question. How important is your thinking? How important is your thinking? Somebody says, well, I never thought about that. That's the whole point. We don't think about what we think about. If you are what you eat, and there is truth in that, more importantly, you are what you think. And there is Bible in that. Proverbs 23 and verse 7. As a man thinks within himself, so is he. So what you think about on a regular basis, what you think about is important. So back to my original question. What do you think about? What do you think about? Paul tells us in Philippians 4 and verse 8 what we need to be thinking about, or at least he gives us some boundaries, he gives us some perimeters here. He says, I want you to think about things that are true and good and right and honorable and excellent, he says. And if we would take these thoughts and use them in our lives, it would change everything. Because most of us don't think about what we think about. But it's either or. Either you are motivated to think God-honoring thoughts that lead you in one direction, or you are motivated to think thoughts that lead you in a whole different direction. But your thinking is important. As a man thinks, so is he. Now then, a lot of what goes on in life, we can't control. We can't control what other people do. We can't control what other people say. We can't control the traffic. We can't control the weather. We can't control any of those things. But ladies and gentlemen, we have 100% complete control over the thoughts that we have. And if we are going to make any kind of positive life change, that's where we have to start. Paul said that in Romans 12 and verse 2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed. How? How am I going to be transformed? He says, by the way that you think. The way that you think. Do you understand there's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the degree to which you experience enjoyment in life? That there's a direct correlation between your thoughts and the atmosphere that settles in your home and your family life? that there's a direct correlation between your thoughts and how well you interact with other people. It all comes down to how you think. Proverbs 4 and verse 23. Watch over your heart. That's another way of saying your thinking. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Your thoughts are important. You know what limits us? What limits us is not our past. I hear people make that excuse. Oh, if you just knew my past. If you just knew where I've been, what I've done, and the mistakes I've made, then you would understand how hard this is for me. And so, you know, last time I checked, we all have a past. Every one of us. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We've all made mistakes. We'd all like to have some do-overs in life. But the fact is, you learn from those and you move on. So we all have a past. That's not what limits us. And what limits us is not our present. I don't know anybody whose present circumstances are just always wonderful and great. What limits us is what we keep communicating to ourselves. What limits us is what we keep telling ourselves. It's this self-talk. It's these thoughts that bounce around inside our heads between our ears. And Paul says, you've got to learn to discipline your thinking. He says, I want you to dwell on these things. I want you to ponder these things, God things, good things, things that are just and pure and right and excellent, he says. And think how different we would be if we just did this. Think how we could impact the world if we just began to think this way. I know Jesus said, let your light shine before men that they may see your good works and come to glorify your Father is in heaven. But ladies and gentlemen, good works begin with good thoughts. That's where it all starts. And Paul says, you've got to get square with your thinking. By the way, does anybody know where Paul was when he wrote this? Where was he? Prison. Prison. That's a fun place. Here is a man in prison. And you would think he would write a letter from our way of thinking normally. You would think he would write a woe is me kind of letter. You don't know how hard I have it here. The food is terrible. I'm chained to these guards. And by the way, they smell really bad. And I'm cold and I'm hungry and I'm not free, you know, like you are. That's not what he does. Here is a man unfairly accused, cast into prison because of his faith, facing an unknown future, probably facing death. And he makes a deliberate decision, a proactive decision, to think God-honoring thoughts, and he writes a little letter, and the theme of which is joy. If you read the letter from Paul to the Philippians, it is amazing how many times he uses the word joy or rejoice. How could this man do this? Because he chose to. Because he made a choice. He made a decision to honor God with his thinking. Why? Because his thoughts were a reflection of his faith. Let me say that again. His thoughts were a reflection of his faith. And so are yours. So are yours. Your thinking is critical to who you are. Let me tell you three things I'm not. I am not mechanically minded. If I can't fix something with a hammer, I'm not interested. People will call our house and they'll say to Julie, they'll say, is Wilson handy? And she says, no. He isn't. He isn't handy at all. And I'm not. I'm just not mechanic. Every time I try to fix something, it just makes it worse. So I'm not mechanically minded. I'm not musically inclined. You know, the rest of my family, they sing, they play all kinds of musical instruments, and when they all get together and perform and all this kind of deal, I was like, what do you want me to do? They said, sit there. Just be quiet, you know? I don't have the gene. My dad's 91 years old, and he is a proficient guitar player. And when you go into his formal dining room in his home, there is his Tennessean Gretsch electric Chet Atkins guitar on a stand next to his amplifier that he still plays at age 91. He's still nimble enough to do that. His gigs are now, he goes to the nursing home. he gets one of the elders from church to be his roadie. He says, you be my roadie, take my stuff. And he goes over there. But he loves doing that, and I'm so glad he can still do that. But I'm not musically inclined. And I'm not into technology either. My printer broke 6 months ago. And I still haven't replaced it. I just went and bought new legal pads. That's it. My friend David Holder in Fort Worth, Texas says, my idea of an upgrade is to go get a new legal pad. That's about it. That's okay, whatever. For the longest time, I had as a phone, what I called a retro mobile device. It was the coolest thing. I mean, I wore this holster, and it would fit in there, and you could pull it out, and I mean, that thing would flip out just like that. It was really cool. It was small, and it was neat, and it did everything I needed it to do. And my kids kept laughing at me and all this kind of thing. And one day, I left my phone in the gym, in the little cubby where you leave stuff, and so I came home. I couldn't find my phone, and so I go back there, and there it is, sitting right where I left it. So I told our son Luke, I said, Luke, that proves people are still honest. He says, Dad, that proves nobody wants your stinking phone. That's what that proves. This is the 21st century. Come on, you know. So I had to, what's the word we use? Upgrade? What I'm saying to you this morning is there comes a time in our life when we have to upgrade our thinking. Look over in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, verse 17, verse 18. 1 Thessalonians 5, 16, 17, and 18. He says, rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks. For this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. Now you talk about an upgrade. There's an upgrade right there. Somebody says, I don't know how to do that. How can I rejoice always? My life's not always great. Well, how can I give thanks in everything when everything is, I'm not always thankful for some things. How do I do this? Well, upgrading to this kind of thinking isn't going to happen because everything in your life just falls right into place and everything goes perfectly. I don't know anybody's life like that. I just don't. Paul's wasn't, and he's the one who told us to do this. And yet, the point is that in spite of life's hardship, you and I can make a decision, a thinking decision, that says in spite of it all, I can emphatically and without hesitation, I'm going to make a life choice to wrap my arms around the promises of the living God, and I'm going to stand on those promises. If he can do it, I can do it. If he can do it, you can do it. Do you understand joy is an outside sign of an inside faith? We teach the kids to sing the song, I've got the joy, joy, joy. Where? Down in my heart. You know what Solomon said about that in Proverbs 15:13? He said, if it's in your heart, it's going to show up on your face. If it's in your heart, how could it not show up on your face? Now, I may not understand everything about God. I may not understand all of the things that are happening in my life and as to the why, and I certainly don't understand the timing of God. But at some point in life, you have to make a decision. You're either going to trust Him or not. And if we lived like we really trusted Him, everything about us would be different. Everything about us would be different. We would learn how to pray, and we would learn how to rejoice, and we would learn how to give thanks, even during the hard times. You know, joy is not some distant destination we're going to get to one day. Oh, I understand about heaven. I get that, the ultimate joy destination. But what about between here and there? How do you think God wants us to live now? How is God wanting us to live before we ever get there? My wife always says, it reminds me, the joy is in the journey. And sometimes the journey gets hard. Sometimes it's rough. It's not easy. It wasn't easy for Paul either. But there's always going to be some joy there if I choose to think in that direction. If I choose not to think in that direction, then my life's going to go in another direction. Do you understand that joyful, thankful living, abundant living is right in front of our faces, and sometimes we get so distracted by the stuff and the junk of life that we fail to see it. It's right there and we don't see it. I'll go to the pantry sometimes and I look for the staple of my diet, which is peanut butter. Crunchy peanut butter. And I open the pantry and I'm standing there and I'm looking and looking. And because I'm a husband, because I'm a male, I look a long time, like 2.5 seconds. And I don't see it. And so I holler and say, "Where's the peanut butter?" Well, she's in the back bedroom. And she hollers back, "Third shelf, eye level." Now, because I'm a husband, because I'm a male, and now I'm going to give it my focused attention for 3.5 seconds, and I'm looking, and I'm looking, and I'm looking. And that's when I employ the whiny husband voice. And I say, "It's not there." So she stops what she's doing, leaves the bedroom, comes out through the house, comes into the kitchen, opens the pantry, reaches in, hands me the peanut butter. "Where was it?" "Third shelf, eye level." And she walks off mumbling about husbands and, whatever, helpless or something like that. I don't know. Now, in my defense, I'm 6'4". She isn't. So in my defense, my third shelf eye level and her third shelf eye level are on two different levels. So that's my defense, my story, and I'm sticking to it. That'd make a good country song, wouldn't it? But I think about that sometimes, and I think about, God says, "I put it right in front of your face. It's right there, and you don't see it. Because we get distracted by this, and we get distracted by that, and we get distracted by that, and all of these things. When it's right there in front of our eyes." I tell you what, if we made a decision to think this way, and if we made a decision that I'm going to upgrade my joy, we'd be a lot more fun to be around. When you focus your thinking on these verses, everything in your life gets more peaceful. Your marriage gets better, because I'll tell you what you do. Your marriage gets better because you start focusing on the good traits of your spouse rather than nitpicking all of the faults. And your relationship with your kids get better because you start to realize how brief is the window of opportunity and time that I have. And your relationships with your coworkers get better, and your relationships with your brethren get better, and your relationship with God gets better. And it all starts with how you think. How you think. Now, I don't know if you've noticed it or not, but your thoughts are showing. Your thoughts are showing. I read something the other day that the average person has 50,000 thoughts per day. I read that on the internet, so it has to be true. And then I thought, what idiot counts them? Who in their right mind counts thoughts? Does he get out his legal pad, sit there, go, oh, there's one. And then 5 seconds later, oh, there's another one. Listen, I don't know how many thoughts a person has in a day. And I'll tell you, I don't think anybody else does either. I don't think anybody knows how many thoughts we have in a day. So let's just say we have a bunch of thoughts in the course of a day. Lots of them. But I know this about our thinking. If you take those thoughts, they're going to lead you in one of two directions. They're either going to lead you toward God or they're going to lead you away from Him. And I also know something else. Your thoughts are showing. Jesus said that. In Luke 6 and verse 45, He says, the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. You ever heard somebody say, oh, I shouldn't have said that. I spoke before I thought. No, you didn't. That's not true. Now, you could argue, you know, I didn't think about that long enough. Okay, that's probably true. But if you spoke it, you only spoke it because you first thought it. Because you can't divorce your thinking from your speech. You can't divorce your thinking from your behavior. They go together. If you did it, if you said it, you first thought it. The problem is most of the thoughts we have today, we keep repeating from yesterday. And that's why it's hard to change. And that's why Solomon says in the book of wisdom, Proverbs 23:7, as a man thinks, that's how he's going to be. And that's why it's hard to change. Because if I keep thinking in the same way, what's the old saying? If nothing changes, nothing changes. And change starts in the mind. It starts with the way I think. And it doesn't matter what kind of change you want to make. You can make, it could be physical changes you need to make in your life. It could be financial changes you need to make in your life. It could be relational changes you need to make in your life. It could be financial, spiritual, whatever it is, whatever changes you need to make in your life. If you don't fix your thinking, nothing's going to change. You know, guys like Brother Moody get up on a regular basis and they remind all of us, and rightfully so, that when God made us, He made us a free moral agent. You ever heard those words? What does that mean? What's the free moral agency of man? Well, what that means is when God made you, He gave you the freedom to think however you want to think. God's not going to force you to think right any more than He's going to force you to do anything else. God doesn't force you to read your Bible, does He? God doesn't force you to pray. God doesn't force you to make good decisions. And God doesn't force you to think in a certain way. All of those are choices, and they are choices you and I make every day. So if I choose to live with a negative, faithless mindset, that's on me. That's my choice. If I choose to live in doubt, that's on me. That's my choice. If I choose to worry, worry, worry about everything, that's on me. That's my choice. If I choose to be a drama king or a drama queen, that's on me. That's my choice, you see. Or I can make another choice. I can determine with my mind to renew it and approve what the will of God is. Somebody says, well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Oh, that's a great excuse. Okay. I drove 600 miles over here to tell you this. You ready for this? You're not a dog. That's it. That's what I came to tell you. You're not a... Oh, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, great, but you're not a dog. And Paul, as he writes this in Philippians chapter 4, I want you to notice what else he says about that. Down in verse 11 and verse 12, he says, not that I speak from want, for I have learned... Wait a minute, Paul, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Paul said, no. I had to learn this. This didn't come naturally to me. I had to learn this. I've had to learn to be content in whatever circumstances I am. In verse 12, I know how to get along with humble means. I know how to live in prosperity in any and every circumstances. I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, having abundance and suffering need. He said, I had to figure some stuff out. I had to learn some stuff. I'm guessing you and I need to learn some stuff too. And one of the things I need to learn is, by and large, I'm the product of my decisions and my thinking, not my circumstances. I can't always pick my circumstances, but I can always pick my attitude toward it. And at some point in life, I got to take ownership. I got to take responsibility. So do you. Because the attitude that I choose is a reflection of my faith in God, period. So what attitude am I going to choose? What attitude are you going to choose? My wife asked me a question. When is March Madness? Now, I'm a smart aleck sometimes. And I said, March? And she said, I know it's March. When in March, okay? You ever watch March Madness? You ever watch these basketball games? My dad, I talked to my dad on the way over here the other day. And my stepmother recently passed away, so he's by himself and struggling a little bit. But he said, I said, how are you doing today? He said, I'm kind of sleepy. I said, why? He said, well, I stayed up and watched those basketball games last night. I stayed up to 12:30. He said, I never do that. He said, I stayed up to 12:30. And then I looked around and go, well, there's nobody telling me to go to bed. So I stayed up to 12:30. He said, well, boy, I'm sure tired today. Listen, when you watch a basketball game, you know the ebb and the flow of the game. And here it is in the second half, and it's getting down maybe 5-6 minutes left to go in the game. And here's the team with the lead, and the other team's starting to cut into that lead, and the momentum's getting ready to shift. And the coach stands up and he says, timeout, timeout, timeout. And he gets his guys over there, and he starts talking to them, and he gets in their face, and he says, get your head back in the game. Why? Because their thoughts are going somewhere else. They're not thinking clearly. They're exhausted. They're tired. They're weak. And he gets in their face and he challenges them to get their head back in the game. And that's what Paul is challenging us to do. Get your head back in the game. Do you understand if you hang around negative, faithless people, you're going to become just like them? 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good morals. That's not just written to teenagers, by the way. If I go see somebody in the hospital in Nashville, and let's say I get on at the 11th floor and I'm coming down, and somebody else gets on at the 11th floor and coming down, and the elevator closes and it's just the two of us, and this other guy goes, oh, I think I'm getting the flu. What do? I just hit 10. I'm getting off on the 10th floor. I'm taking the stairs where I'm going all the way down. I don't want to be around that guy. Because we understand that some things are kind of catchy. You know, you can catch that. And it's the same with negativity. It's the same with faithlessness. Read Numbers 13 and 14. And the spies and the 10 of which said, we can't take the land. There's giants in the land. And two of them said, get your eyes off the giants and get your eyes on God. 10 people had the fear, 2 people had the faith. And if you know the context of Numbers 13 and 14, you know who influenced who. Let me leave you with this in 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. You read 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5 and tell me how important is your thinking. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, the very end of the verse, he says, you are to take every thought captive to Christ. What does that mean? When our son Dale was little guy, every Saturday night he would drag me in front of the television because a new show had come on and it had become quickly his favorite show. And so he would drag me in front of the television and say, Dad, we got to watch this. You know what it was? Cops. Remember that? Bad boys, bad boys. What? You remember that? And so every Saturday night, he dragged me in front of the TV and he says, "Look there, Dad. Look at that. They got the bad guy. They got him off the street. They got him in handcuffs. They got him in the car and they're taking him to jail. One of these days, Dad, that's what I want to do. I want to get the bad guys off the street and get them in handcuffs and take them to jail." Guess what he does? He's been in law enforcement for years. And I think about that, and I think about this verse, "Take every thought captive to Christ." When you begin to think in a direction you're not sure about, or you begin to have an attitude that you're not sure about, or behavior or a decision you're not sure about, what do? You better throw the handcuffs. You throw the handcuffs on that. And you take that before the judge. You go to God in prayer. You sit down with some people that have some experience and some wisdom, and you get some counsel, and then you make a decision. And if you decide, you know, that thought, I don't need to think in that direction, I don't need to have that attitude, I don't need to make that decision, and if you decide that that's not what you need to do, not only do you put the handcuffs on that, you incarcerate that and you put that away from you. Take every thought captive to Christ. I want to tell you are what you think. You are what you think. It's either or. You're either going to think with faith or you're going to think with fear. So maybe it's time that you got an upgrade to the way that you think. We sing the song of invitation. At some point in time, you have to come to terms with God, and you have to come to terms with His Son Jesus, and you have to come to terms with the invitation of the gospel that He offers. You can continue to put that off and off and off. But by putting it off, you've thought about it enough, you've made a decision, and it's not a good one. Or you can make a decision to give your life to the one who gave His life for you. You've heard about the Ethiopian this morning. What a marvelous conversation he had as Philip opened his mouth and began to preach Jesus to him. And as they rode along, he said, "Here is some water. What prevents me from being baptized?" And Philip said, "If you believe with all of your heart, you may." And he said, "I believe." And Philip took him down into the water and he baptized him. How simple. How beautiful is the gospel. And it is that gospel invitation that is offered to you right now as we stand and sing.